Blog Talk Radio.
Wait, 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 hi yo hey, hi yo hey, ho we are, ya we are, we are a o, we are a o, we yo hi yo hey, we yo hey yo hey yo. When the wind starts to blow and the rain starts to fall. From the sky to the ground, yeah, we are. Listen, can you hear? Can you hear their beautiful song? Way oh, hey oh, hey oh. Hi yo hey ho we are ya we are we are it out we are it out we yo hi yo hey 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 yo hey yo.
When the wind starts to blow and the rain starts to fall. From the sky to the ground, yeah, we are. Listen, can you hear? Can you hear their beautiful song? Hey yo, hey yo, hey yo.
When the wind starts to blow and the rain starts to fall from the sky to the ground, yeah, we are. Listen, can you hear? Can you hear their beautiful song? Way yo, hey yo, hey yo.
When the wind starts to blow and the rain starts to fall from the sky to the ground, yeah, we are. Listen, can you hear? Can you hear their beautiful song?
Hey yo, hey yo, hey yo.
Welcome, welcome to Crow Voices. This is Beata. I'm in the studio tonight in beautiful Umatilla, Florida. And Peggy, well-known Buffalo, is on the line. Peggy, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good evening. I am
good evening.
Here in Atlanta. Yeah.
Oh,
I'm
wow.
Here in Atlanta at the Hearst restaurant, or it's a, I think it's Chinese and other great stuff to eat. It's on Peachtree, right here
okay.
in Atlanta. And across the 1.5 a block is where the convention is taking place on disabilities. You know, the one I came with my son Scooter. We talked about it last week. And
yes,
over
ma'am.
In Phoenix, yeah. So I visited
yes,
from Phoenix. I visit relatives and so Arizona, and now I'm in Atlanta.
Wow, you're really traveling.
Uh-huh. I just saw a lot of great land. I went to, Mississippi and kind of like the Deep South. You know,
yep,
right?
That's what it is.
Yeah. It was just amazing.
How long will you be in Atlanta?
I'll be here until Thursday. And then Thursday I'm going to be heading back to Montana. Uh-huh.
Well, I'll be in Atlanta Wednesday night, so I will call you Thursday and see if I can hook up with you and give you a big hug.
Oh, why don't we do that? We'll be here Wednesday is his presentation at noon or in the morning, right before noon, and then there'll be one more day of it, but that'll be great. Wednesday night or Thursday, are you here for a convention or something? Hello?
I get in really late Wednesday night, so it would have to be
uh-huh.
sometime
so
Thursday.
So it'd be Thursday.
Yeah,
we have to do that.
I'm going to be camping out with Kwame that weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And Saturday
wow.
I have a book signing at a bookstore in Atlanta for my dad's book. So I'm there for two reasons.
Ah. Oh, that'll be so great. Anyway, we're
yes.
having dinner here. And I have a special guest named Leslie Walker, who I'm going to have her tell you about what she's doing. And then I have Susie and some other participants there. They've come to this convention for 20 years now, I think. And then there's Scooter and I. So is it really noisy? Can you hear me? Very good.
I can hear you. Yes. Yes, we can hear you well.
Uh-huh. So anyway, so I'm going to put them on. And what I would like to do this evening is Leslie's going to, when we give our presentation tomorrow with what we're reading or what we're going to be saying there about we're going to practice, which means everyone can hear our speech before anybody else does. So I think it would be very interesting. It would be good, you know, it's just really good stuff. The only kind of bad thing about this is that, not bad, but not. We won't be able to show you the pictures that Scooter drew on when he talks about, you know, all his, what he went through and all this. And there's so much healing going on with him. It's just unbelievable. He's just kind of really became this man that, you know, fear was in him for about 8 years, 6 years. I didn't see any life in him. Like, he was so scared of everything. And now today, I'm just so overwhelmed by thanking about it and thanking all the people who were involved in his life, you know, and it's just really amazing, and how his own medicine is going to be working for him, and that this would lead him to many bigger and greater things, you know, that he is a voice for those who are incompetent and a voice for Native Americans who have their, you know, Native Americans or any cultural who still has their cultural there and who, you know, who have been, have gone through a lot of unnecessary treatment. So it's just really interesting for when we were there today, just the people who weren't able to get in to share their stories. There is many of them, hundreds of them, and they had their stories all on these wall boards, and we went along reading it, and you know, he read, you know, we had to read to him because he's limited in his reading, and he was just so happy to be there. He just smiled, and he says, you know, he was just overwhelmed that there were so many like him, and he never knew, you know, he never got to meet or even share their stories in any way. If I happen to lose you on my phone, I'll be calling in with Susie's. I have three cell phones here. Susie's a 703, and the other one would be a 406, okay? Because I'm using all the juice. I'm getting three different phones with their juice because I didn't plug mine in. I was so busy, you know, getting involved with people and their stories, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm just really looking. Yeah, do you have any questions? I'm going to get them on now. It's 8, I think it's after 8, but then I lost time. I thought I missed, you know, Atlanta at the same time. So I thought I was home, and I call up Arizona, and I said, I'm 1 hour. I missed the show 1 hour. And she said, no, Peggy, you have 1 hour left. And I said, I kind of cut on. I was so relieved. My gosh.
Well, look forward for Leslie.
Pardon?
I'm looking forward to hear Leslie Walker.
Yeah, I'm going to get Susie on right now, and she's going to introduce everyone, and we'll get the show going here. Okay, so here's Susie.
Take it away.
You want to say the editor?
Hello. Good evening. No, it is on the speaker. Okay. Hello, good evening.
Good evening.
Did you hear her?
Can you repeat that?
Hello?
Hello?
There you go. Here.
Where are we going?
Okay. I'm just going to here's Susie, and she's going to introduce and talk about what we're going to do this evening, okay?
We're here with Scooter, Peggy, and Leslie. Leslie is Scooter's educator, and we are going to present the talk we're giving at the AAIDD conference here in Atlanta. It's a national conference on people with disabilities, and we are going to be presenting this tomorrow at 11 a.m., and we wanted to give you the first run-through. So here is Leslie Walker Hirsch.
Hello, this is Leslie Walker Hirsch. I'm happy to be here in Atlanta with so many nice people and people I've known for a long time. I'm a consultant in social development and sexuality of people who have intellectual and developmental disabilities. I'm here with Peggy, as you know, and with Susie and some friends as well, and Scooter, too. Scooter's wearing his regalia tonight to celebrate the telling of this painful and complicated true story of Scooter and his family's experience in employment of racial and disability prejudice, historical trauma, and the lateral violence that is frequently encountered on Indian reservations. Horizontal or lateral violence is a process of acting out anger at displaced targets. Cecilia Fire Thunder, the Ogallala Lakota president of the Ogallala and Lakota Nation Education Coalition, explains lateral violence as when oppressed people cannot express their anger or frustration, the aggression has to go somewhere, so it goes towards others. We don't put it where it needs to go. We turn it on each other. With these elements in mind and the prejudice of people against people with autism, especially in the area of social and sexual development, the oppression of Scooter's family began in 2007. And Scooter, who is the easiest target because he was the most vulnerable, continues to be harassed and deprived of his cultural and family traditions. I'm going to turn this over to Susie Kelly to begin this story. Here you go, Susie.
As a baby, Scooter was abandoned in the Crow Northern Cheyenne Hospital, where Peggy was volunteering in the nursery. Peggy survived her experience in Indian boarding schools as a child by nurturing babies from her home community and continued this nurturing pastime as an adult. Scooter was going to be sent away to California to an adoption agency, but Peggy fell in love with him. She knew his birth family on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation. Throughout his life, Peggy has always made sure he knew his Northern Cheyenne relatives, as well as his adopted Crow extended family. At age 3, Scooter was diagnosed with a congenital liver defect that affected his development. He was expected not to live past the age of 6. He was treated at the Denver Children's Hospital, who considered him terminal. He was also treated using Indian healing practices with herbs by a Blackfoot medicine man from Canada. He will turn 29 this year. Scooter is taking classes at a community college in culinary arts and volunteers at a food bank. In addition, I just changed that. I didn't say fantasy. It's okay.
Oh, no. Okay, wait.
Peggy, we can't hear you, so I'm going to assume that her phone dropped, so we're going to wait for Peggy to call back in and see what happens. Let's see.
Peggy, are you back? Yes. I don't know what part of what part we left off at.
Well, it got so noisy in the background that we could hardly hear, so just start wherever you like.
Okay. So, okay. And do you want did you get all of what Susie had to say?
We could hear her, but
okay.
There was a lot of noise in the background.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, can you hear me?
Yeah, it's very clear and there's no background noise.
Okay. You might have to move over here and redo yours. Okay. In addition to Scooter, I had one natural child and adopted three more. I was also a foster parent to more than 400 children through the years. I am a community leader on the Crow Reservation, and I speak up for the rights of children and on other Native American issues. In 1999, I started a nonprofit called the Center Pole. I have been given an accolade by the Dalai Lama as an unseen hero of compassion, thus for work in my reservation and community.
Tell me if you can't hear me.
Are you there?
Yes,
hello?
I'm here. I can hear you.
Okay, I'm sorry. We're just having a lot of problems here. Scooter's ordeal started in 2007. Peggy was in the process of adopting three children who had been placed with her in foster care. They were related to her in the Crow way. Peggy interrupted a child trafficking operation. Okay, I had to move. Scooter's ordeal started in 2007. Peggy was in the process of adopting three children who had been placed with her in foster care. They were related to her in the Crow way. Peggy interrupted a child trafficking operation. She was unfairly accused of child abuse and her foster care license was revoked. Scooter was unfairly and without any evidence accused of fondling the foster children. He was taken by the Bureau of Indian Affairs Police and the FBI from his bed and questioned. He was forced to sign a confession and waive his rights on documents that he did not understand and without a parent, guardian, or lawyer present. Scooter was taken to tribal jail. It was at that time that the federal government got huge grants to prosecute sex offenders on Indian reservations, and it is our belief that this in part was motivation for Scooter's arrest. In tribal court, his case was dismissed because there was no evidence, and Scooter had never been in any previous trouble with the law. 3 months later, he was indicted by the federal court system.
If a crime, this is Leslie again, if a crime is committed against a non-Indian on an Indian reservation, the person accused is an Indian, it automatically becomes a federal case. You probably heard the expression, don't make a federal case out of this small situation. Now I really know what that means.
Scooter was charged with aggravated sexual assault of four minor children. He was released on an electronic monitor and could not go out of a 10 by 12 room in Peggy's house. 9 months later, he was given a pretrial release. He left the reservation and stayed away because of the hostility directed at him by the community. While he was gone, people continued to accuse him of sex crimes on the Crow Reservation in Montana, even though he wasn't there. He fulfilled the conditions of his release. 6 months later, he did come back to Montana, and the accusations and harassment continued. At the direction of his public defender, he moved to another state, New Mexico. The federal prosecutor then claimed he was running from the law and indicted him on more counts of aggravated sexual abuse. She also indicted Peggy and myself on federal charges of misprison of a felony, meaning that we had known about and had hidden what Scooter was doing. Scooter was rearrested and went back on a monitor and was confined to his aunt's small living room and not allowed outside all of the stifling hot summer. At that point, Peggy hired a real lawyer, Penny Strong, for Scooter and different lawyer for us. Although Scooter had already had 3 professional evaluations, he was sent to SeaTac Federal Prison for an evaluation imprisonment, which lasted for more than a month. He was then put on a monitor. A few months later, he was sent to Butner, North Carolina Federal Prison psychiatric floor for 5 months for another evaluation to see if he was competent to stand trial. He was deemed not competent. He went back on the monitor again and confined. He was then sent back for another month and a half evaluation to determine if he was a danger to society. He was deemed not to be a danger to society. The prosecutor said he was a monster and wanted to put him away for life. The judge agreed.
You may have read about this judge. He was the one who was forced to step down from his judgeship because it was discovered that he had made racist remarks about President Obama. Later, 400 more racist emails were discovered that he had sent, but they have still not been released to the public. A federal panel in Montana ruled that his attitude had no effect on his rulings in court, but it has gone to a higher court for a decision, and he has stepped down.
After more than a year, Peggy's and my case were dropped, but not before the federal prosecutor tried to force us to take a plea and admit guilt. She said she had much more evidence that she would take before the grand jury and put us away for 25 years if we didn't. We refused. A replacement judge took a look at Scooter's case and said he was indicted on pathetic evidence and released him. He said this case shouldn't have never gone this far and dismissed it. Scooter moved away from his community for good. He moved to New Mexico. When his favorite aunt, Aunt Ada, died, Scooter came back to attend the funeral. More accusations had been made against him, and he had a bench warrant. Just as his aunt's grave was covered, 5 police cars pulled up. He was arrested at the burial site and thrown into tribal jail for 2 weeks this time. This was the Friday of Thanksgiving weekend, and so no banks or lawyers were available to post bail or intercede in any way. It was also Scooter's birthday weekend. In tribal court again, he received a pretrial release and moved away, back to New Mexico. Based on gossip and hearsay and no evidence, Scooter spent more than 2 years in jail and on a monitor. His court cases have cost his family more than $60,000 as well as relocation expenses. He can't go home to the Crow Reservation because there is fear that this will be a repeat of the nightmare for all of us. Scooter would like to work in a grocery store. Peggy's community nonprofit survives. The center pole is stronger than ever. The child trafficking ring was reported but never investigated.
Although Scooter has survived this ordeal and his devoted family members have supported him both emotionally and financially, the effects of his imprisonment and dislocation continue to intrude upon him as he is deprived of the comfort of his extended family, his tribal identity, and his Crow and Northern Cheyenne cultural traditions. I've been helping Scooter recall and come to terms with his past through both words and drawings that we want to share with you as part of this presentation now. And I'm going to put Scooter on so he can read some of the stories that he wrote. And, of course, because this is radio, you can't see the wonderful illustrations. Here's Scooter for you.
Hi, my name is Scooter. I'll read my description. Courthouse drawing. I went to the courthouse to talk about my case. The judge was there, and the court reporter and the prosecutor was there. So with my lawyer Penny Stone and my family were sitting in the back. The judge told me to wear the ankle leg monitor and stay at my Aunt Ada's house all summer. I did not go to places with my aunt and help her get food for the house. I could not go anywhere by myself alone. I did not like the ankle monitor. I was allergic to the strap. After 1 hour outside, I had to go inside the house. It was so hot in the house. We just sat there and watched CNN. Made it to Butner. This is when I came to Butner, North Carolina. They took the prison clothes away. They put their clothes in a box. They took my property clothes, my cap, my shirt, my pants, my shoes. The guards had a blue uniform and a walkie-talkie and 2 guns. They gave me an orange jumpsuit. I felt lonely and sad. Prison life in Seattle prison. I spent my time in my cell. I meditated on the kind of my prayers in my heart. I said words in my core language that I cannot write down the words that watch over me when I get out. I thought about my family. I wish that I was hope that I could be with them. I was afraid to be there in prison. I was get nervous and did not want to be there. Meditating made me feel less nervous. Getting mail once a week. The guards give out mail to the inmates. They slide their cards and letters under the cell door. When I got a card, I was happy that I got one. I was really grateful that I got a card from my family. I knew they were thinking about me. They wrote, "Be strong and you will be out soon." Aaron sent me a card. Leslie sent me a card with a photo of Lobo the dog. It kind of lifted me up and I kept them above my bed. The time in my cell, I read Time magazines and newspapers on my bed and meditate. And everyone was a stranger. Prison. I could not trust them. I didn't talk to them. They didn't talk to me. They were murderers and drug dealers and trafficking. The guards were community helpers. They gave me stuff like cosmetics and razors and shavers. The guards gave us meals. I didn't like the food, but I had to eat it. And the powdered milk, it was bad. Meeting Mr. Red Elk in Butner, North Carolina, I met a man. His name was Robert Red Elk. He was more than 50 years old. He was 18 years old when he got to Butner prison. I think he was been living in Butner prison for around 38 years. I don't know what he did. Red Elk was not allowed to talk about how he ended up in Butner, North Carolina prison. It must has been off the reservations. He belongs to the Blackfeet tribe in northern Montana. He didn't have visitors. I think he felt disappointed and shame. He told me that. Pizza party. On my last day, Mr. Redout put on a pizza party for me, Scooter. He invited other inmates to the pizza party too. The guards let us all go into Mr. Redout's cell, and Mr. Redout brought pop for us. They felt sad that I was leaving. I was happy that I was leaving. I think about them and Mr. Redout and hope he is doing well. Bernie Murdoch could not make it to the party. It went so well. The next day, my mother and Susie came down to pick me up, Scooter, and we headed back to Virginia. Now I do not have to think about prison. His tribe sent him his money. He spends some of it, but not all of it. We watched TV together. We sat in plastic chairs by the Mercer station. Medicine man, my mom suggested that I could go to the medicine man because I felt bad of my situation. He would get the bad feelings out of me by smudging me with powerful medicine. He says good words for me. After I felt really great, I felt calm in my whole body. The Two River Detention Center. After my Aunt Ada's funeral, the tribal police picked me up and took me to the Two River Detention Center. I am not comfortable in the facility. The barbed wire fence made me think I would have to stay there until I got out. The blackout windows made me feel trapped. It was not on the Crow reservation. It was off the reservation. The old one was teared down. Passing by Butner, right after New Year Eve, my mom and Susie and the dogs and I went to visit their friends from Washington, D.C., who now live in Greensboro, North Carolina, who retired from the Greensboro College. All then had to drive past the U.S. Department of Justice Federal Bureau of Prison Camp, Butner, North Carolina. When I saw the sign, I got frightened, and I tried not to think about prisons. I felt so emotion that my stomach felt like throwing up. Sweat lodge. I go to the sweat lodge on Sundays with my uncles and my dad. The men take off their clothes and go into the sweat lodge. Then one person brings in the hot water and the hot rubber walks. The canvas blanket keeps the heat in. The men get burned hot, sweaty. The men pray for their families and friends. They take turns flushing out their feelings in both languages, Crow and English. I miss the sweat lodge and my uncles and friends. The end.
Buddha, that was really great. I only wish the radio people could see the wonderful drawings that you made that these stories were about. This is Leslie again, and I'd like to conclude this. I'd like to recount a recent email exchange that I had with Robert Persky, who is a citizen advocate and author of the book Deadly Innocent, the tragic story of Joe Arity, a man with an intellectual disability who was tricked into signing a confession and was wrongfully executed in 1939. His name was recently cleared posthumously. Of course, it didn't do him any good posthumously, but at least his family could rest easier. I wrote to Robert Persky about Scooter's situation, asking for some guidance and advice. I wasn't surprised that he answered my email. He wrote modestly that he, quote, tries as best as he can to show that a certain defendant with a disability was coerced into confessing to a crime he or she did not commit. Then I look for others in the various social and clinical fields and ordinary citizens who can view the situation as I found it. Then as a group, we move forward. Sometimes we win, and at other times we are defeated. After reading your letter, I am convinced that Scooter White might serve as a central person surrounded by a circle of friends in Atlanta. And here we all are. Robert Persky's 2008 publication listed 53 false confessions by people with intellectual limitations to major felonies that they did not commit. And the most recent article listed an additional 22. Some are deceased. 65 have been exonerated by DNA tests. In recent times, and thanks to lawyers and the Wave of Innocence Project organizations all over the U.S., there is greater awareness of the vulnerability of individuals like Scooter who continue to bear the burden of false confessions or confessions that were obtained without proper consent. I'm glad you all came to listen to this radio show today. And if you want to hear from us again, give us a call. Bye-bye. I'm going to put Peggy back on.
Were you able to hear? Hello?
Yes, hello? I'm listening. Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Uh-huh, yes. Anyway,
we have Mama
so that's
on
the story.
Mama AZ, did you have any comments or questions?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, goodness. This is really, really awesome, everybody. And greetings, Peggy, Miss Susie, and especially you, Scooter, and your guests. I mean, honestly, if I had the whole picture of everything that has been unfolding starting back in 79, I probably wouldn't have been able to master this because I would have been too scared to move forward with what I was singing and what the Creator and the Ascended Masters have been giving me. Now, Peggy, I have so much to share with you. I was half asleep when you called me. I was in meditation. Now, what did you tell me about that drum? I can hear you clear now.
I just wanted to thank you. Thank you for giving him the drum. Now, the drum was a Cheyenne sign, Cheyenne drum. And
well, actually,
the sign of the Morning Star is on it, and his Indian name is Morning Star in Cheyenne. So it was just really amazing at how that kind of came into his hand, and he looked at it, and, you know, I wasn't paying attention because it was so hot and everything, you know. I was in a hurry. Santa Fe, he looks at it, and he says it's a Cheyenne drum, and he just loved it, and
Let me clarify this. Those drums are not to be, they're to come back. Those drums are to travel. And it was hot, and there was a lot going on. Those drums are there to go to Scooter for him to open them up and prepare them for the sacred spaces that they are going to be going. You see, Scooter has a special mission, and the more that I listen to his mission and his journey, it just overwhelms me because of the information that has been given to me. And I'm thinking, like, am I crazy? Or why am I hearing this? You know, and I had no idea that they were the Ascended Masters, and the Creator was talking to me about Scooter. And how that came to be was that night there at the Healing Center in Mesa, when Scooter and you guys talked about his mission and why he's there in Atlanta right now. It's been overwhelming me, Peggy, because when I hear these things and people think I'm crazy, and you and Scooter and Miss Susie have given me the opportunity to know that I am not crazy, that I do hear these things. And those drums came from Rapid City, a very, very special artist that I know you know. So it's so much that I could tell you, but this is private. And thank you, because let me tell you what I've been told. Those drums and many others that are going to come, even Mama Kahuna and the tree drum there to Centerpole for Scooter to open up to travel, they're going to Haifa, Israel. And, I'm telling you, Peggy, I'm telling you what I saw at that cabin. I'm telling you, and those drums must travel with you. Please, Scooter, get those drums prepared for the gathering there in Virginia, and then they can go back to Centerpole. So I don't know what else to tell you right now. So I will be quiet, Scooter, and listen to your journey, because I'm going to tell you what, young brother, this is so vital. Peggy, there are other things that you are going to hear and you're going to recognize. I can't tell you, but right now the Creator will tell you. So I'll be quiet and listen. I love us. Thank us.
Thank us. Okay. Well, anyway, Vieta, I have to cut my my show kind of short this evening because I have a half a block to walk. I need my energy. I had to walk up a hill. Now I'm going to walk down a hill. So.
Wow. Yes. Well, I'm just so grateful to have heard the whole story tonight. I'm just in awe and just saying, wow. I'm just saying, wow, throughout the show. It's just amazing. It's almost like you're all healing from post-traumatic stress disorder. That's a lot to go through. A whole family has gone through quite a trauma. So I just bless you and thank you for sharing that, and we'll continue to pray for your total recovery from that's a lot. You know, it reminds me of Muhammad Ali for some reason, because Muhammad Ali spoke up when they wanted him to do things that his conscience told him he couldn't do, and they persecuted him for that. They put him in jail. And, you know, he just passed away. And so we're all thinking about the life of Muhammad Ali, but right now before us is the life of Scooter and Peggy and the whole family put through the legal shenanigans and lies of the quote government. Well, this is what I'm thinking about, though. Muhammad Ali said He said, "You're my enemy." He told the U.S. government and the white man, "You're my enemy. Why should I go over and fight people in Vietnam and over other countries and kill them? Because you're my enemy." And that's what I was hearing as Scooter was telling his story and as you've shared this journey. Your enemy has been right here in this country.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Vieta, I didn't. Yes. I thank you. Anyway, Vieta, what I wanted you to share now is why you're going to be here and what book you wrote and where you're going to have your lip sing, because I have friends here that would probably like to hear that when you get done.
I'm coming to Atlanta, first of all, for a book signing on Saturday, the 11th. I'll be at the Medu bookstore in Greenbrier Mall from 2 to 5, signing my dad's book that I just finished last year and talking about the evolution of football, basically, and sharing his story with people who come to the bookstore. That's in Atlanta, Greenbrier Mall, Legend Bookstore. And then around that event, I'll be going to a Fresh Feast Festival in Moreland, Georgia, where Kwame will be building a sweat lodge, and for 3 days, I'll be partaking in events and volunteering. I've also volunteered to do some work there. But about 100 people, I think, are expected to show up in Moreland, Georgia for this Fresh Feast about organic living and natural living. And we'll be camping out in tents and getting to know people. So that'll be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So I'll be getting in there on Wednesday, late Wednesday night, and I'll contact you, Peggy, some Thursday and see if we can meet someplace.
Okay. You turned it off.
Are you
done? Oh, just the ringer.
Anyway, I don't know what we, I trust, but do you hear me?
I can hear you, a lot of noise in the background.
Yeah.
Okay, that's better.
Okay. Vieta, I'm gonna sign off, and I'll talk to you all next Tuesday. How's that?
All right. Be safe, and I'll hopefully talk to you this Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Thursday, call me.
Be safe,
and we'll meet.
Thank you, and Yahweh will bless you and keep you safe. Aho.
Aho. Thank you all. Aho.